Hello, everyone. This is Jose Palomino with another episode of the Business Growth on Purpose show. And today's guest is Casey Jacox. And Casey is an elite seller who is now coaching others to reach elite status, especially in B2B selling. And he has a unique take on it that isn't all about heavy lifting, blocking and tackling, but on things that I think anybody who wants to sell seriously, wants to sell value well, will take heed to these principles. We're going to cover key principles on how to show up and win the relationship and not just the deal. By having a focus on winning the relationship, you will win more deals. So listen carefully as Casey joins our show right now. Well, welcome, Casey, to Business Growth on Purpose.
Thank you. I'm honored to join you today, and I appreciate having you on your show.
No, it's something we, people who follow our show for a long time know, we love to have real experts in areas that deal with strategy, with marketing, with sales, and sales is a big topic, but we're going to dig into that here. So why don't you tell us just a little bit, for context sake, primarily what you do and who you do it for?
Yeah, so I am a 20-year corporate veteran. I spent a lot of time in the technical staffing and then consulting space. After that, I turned into an author and a podcaster, and now I'm a business and leadership coach, helping companies really in four key areas that I have very much clarity and conscious competence around, which is driving curiosity through organizations. Curiosity is a superpower if we choose to use it. Helping improve messaging, both written and verbal, so customers truly understand what we do for them. And then lastly, helping remove and increase humility and vulnerability within organizations. I think in any sales environment, I've seen that maybe are toxic or aren't, they aren't doing as well as they could. There's fear or unsaid fear within sales teams. Sellers are afraid to ask for help. Sales are afraid to talk about their pipeline. Maybe isn't as healthy as it should be. And that really is a leadership challenge, I believe. I think when leaders can inspire environments where sellers want to ask for help, want to help go meet a customer, not sure what to say, and they're encouraged to do so, I think that's what elite teams do well. And that's really something I'm focused on helping a lot of the customers I work with achieve.
Wow. Wow. So you said four key words that struck me, right? Of course, curiosity, messaging, with humility and vulnerability. So of the four, one that I think most people would intuitively associate with sales, messaging, right? How you communicate and so on. But you added curiosity. So I'd love to unpack that just a little bit first. How that plays out in and you also use the phrase elite sellers. So the idea is not just selling to get by, but selling to like really make a difference. Mm-hmm. So where does curiosity fit in that?
I think curiosity is just the most amazing gift we give not only ourselves but our customers, our prospects, even our teams. I learned from a great mentor late in my sales career, a guy named John Kaplan. He taught me this basic framework called TED. Tell me. Which stands for tell me, explain, describe. And it's a simple way to ask questions to get clients and prospects to think really what's important to them. And most sellers, I would think, who aren't selling at an elite level, they ask a question, could be closed-ended, could be open-ended, and they smell a deal and they pounce a cat on catnip. Where the elite sellers will say, tell me more about that. Describe why that impacts your organization negatively. Explain what would happen if you were able to take that away. Like, deeper and not asking two questions inside of one question, but asking one question and then shutting up and allowing silence to set in. Because when we allow silence to set in, we allow our customer or prospect to think. And in any great meeting, I believe you want to hear two words, which is great question. Because you made your client think, you're creating these uncommon moments. And I think curiosity, when done well, also creates what I call Maya Angelou moments. It's not what I said, why I said it, but how I made you feel when you left the meeting or the room. And, you know, too often sellers make the bad habit of, oh man, I killed that meeting. They love me. They, you know, BS. Sorry. Everybody says that. What did you learn about them? What did you learn about their business? What did you learn about his or her career? What did you learn about their team? Why did you learn about their family? Like, what did you learn? Like, or did you just go in and say, I told them everything on the product guide that I'm supposed to say, or the marketing sheet. If you're doing that, you're being like every other common seller out there. If you want to be uncommon, let silence set in. Ask questions, thoughtful-based questions about someone's business, about where they're going, and the questions that you're scared to ask, ask them, because the elite seller won't be afraid to ask them.
That's really powerful here, Casey. And I think about, I use the metaphor of like in football, like the quarterback staying in the pocket long enough to see the play unfold. Right. So it sounds like you, with proper curiosity, you really are. And what's interesting about that, and I love the word curiosity, suggests that it's genuine, right? Like I really want to know more, as opposed to I'm going through a list of questions my boss told me to ask. And, you know, so I can then reach the point in the conversation where I can now pivot to a pitch. Mm-hmm. That's not what you're saying. No, actually be curious, actually mm-hmm. show people you care about their business, about themselves. Mm-hmm. So I love that. Now, the other two that sound, and again, I'm not saying messaging isn't important to unpack, but I really wanted to focus on the ones that sounded like, is that sales? Mm-hmm. And it's humility. We don't often think of that as associated with selling as a, you know, most people know people who've sold, and we don't normally think of them as being the most humble banana in the bunch. So tell us a little bit about why you landed on humility as such an important attribute of an elite seller.
Well, you mentioned quarterback. Jose, you're making me go Napoleon Dynamite, Uncle Rico moment here. I was a former college quarterback, so you're letting me memory lane here. So my college football coach told me, Casey, if you're good, you're going to tell everybody. When you're great, I'm going to tell you. And that always stuck with me. And as a seller, if you want to know how I'm doing, go run a report, run a GP report, run a revenue report, right? That'll tell you exactly how I'm doing. The film never lies. The data never lies.
Right.
And I was very lucky. I was surrounded by great teammates, great clients, great leaders. And so with all that kind of right guy, right time, I was our number one seller nationally for 10 consecutive years before I moved into an executive role in corporate. And so what I never wanted to be known as, Jaycock, oh yeah, that's that arrogant dude in Seattle. Yeah, what a tool. We don't like that guy. He just treats people the wrong way. But I wanted to be the guy that when you walked into a room, I was just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And then when they asked questions, like, oh wait, you're Casey. Oh my God. Totally nice to meet you. And it's like, oh my God, you can be successful. You can achieve great elite results, but you don't need to be an a-hole. Mm-hmm. I worked with a few people that had egos, arrogant egos. And it was a turnoff for me. And I never wanted to be that guy.
It's work to be around that guy.
It's and no one wants to be it. And so even like now I'm one of the clients I'm coaching. I was hired to help someone remove their ego, but I had to make it his idea, not mine.
Right.
You know, and through, again, I used curiosity. Now, when I got hired to help this gentleman, we came from the similar industry, and I had at the top of my game, I had probably 3 or 4x what he did. And this guy's doing really well. Now, if I would have led with, hey, I'm excited to coach you, just so you know, before we get started, I've done 4x of you, but let's talk about you. I mean, he's going to shut me down and think I'm like this egomaniac, but asking questions, letting it happen, being patient. I got to a point where he was like, oh my God, he came to the real resolution of like, he was the problem. And I'm like, I'm glad it was his idea, but I don't know. I think back to your question, when we're around humble people that they're not afraid to say what they don't know, they're not afraid to ask for help. It creates inspiration. It removes fear. It further builds a growth mindset in cultures. And you just become a lot easier to manage.
Now let's expand on that just a little bit, because I've also seen in somewhat larger sales teams. So, you know, many of the companies we work with tend to be owner led, you know, 10 to 30 million in size. They may have a couple of salespeople, maybe at most 10, but when you get into, I've done a fair amount of corporate work where you get into like 100-person sales teams, and they like to create often a competitive environment. They want people to watch the leaderboard and want to be on top of the leaderboard and so on. How does that connect with this humility you're talking about, or this non-arrogance? And so much of in sales, we use language like we use football metaphors and, you know, punch it over the line and get things, you know, that sense of almost like a martial, like we're going to go to war kind of thing. Mm-hmm. How does humility fit into that environment where somebody is trying to foster this sense of like a winning competitive spirit?
Mm-hmm. I think it goes back a couple of different things. I think one thing, leadership is you are what you allow. Your environment is. So if we allow negative competition to erode our culture, that's on leaders, right? And I think that's fixed by setting an example of we're either no matter how successful he or she is, if he is bringing down the culture, you send a message and you remove them. I've seen it happen before. I think competition's great. I think competition, as long as you lead with, hey, we're going to compete, but you're my teammate and we have the same color, we have the same mascot, and we want to go out and I'd rather compete. Let's have friendly competition against you and, maybe angry competition against my competitors. Mm-hmm. Right. And reminding people that, when we compete, it just like when you think about fitness, the CrossFit phase, when it hit a couple of years ago, I mean, people loved working out together, but then you'd push each other. So I've found and I worked at a very large sales organization. We had 800 reps and, the amount of people I worked around, we had leaders that challenged us to be our best, but also policed it where either the top reps were going to police it when they weren't looking, kind of like in the locker room, or they would just set the tone like, hey, it's this friendly competition. We want everybody to succeed, but we're going to push each other to be the best version of ourselves.
Okay, no, that's great. And just thinking about that, I'm playing out a couple of scenarios in my mind and thinking about people. And, the reality is there are, the top seller at the organization where I got into sales, this is like 35 years ago, literally the top in the world, is a global company.
Wow.
And there was a sales training day being offered by management for the New York office where we were based. And all these veteran salespeople were kind of grousing, I'm so busy. I have so many appointments. I can't do this half day thing. Except this one guy, Dwayne, wasn't that guy. He was like happy to go. And so I'm a young guy and I approached him the next day. I said, Dwayne, why were all these guys complaining? But you were ready to go. And then he took me to his office and along the, like his whole bookshelf was every possible book on sales available at the time. Mm-hmm. He's committed to the art. He says, if I learn one thing that can improve my game, then it was worth the time. And, just that attitude. So that kind of helped shape me. So just when you talk about humility, he wasn't thinking I'm all that in a bag of chips. He was willing to learn something else.
Well, I was going to say, I love that. I love that you said that. So I think that the best thing about the work I'm doing now, Jose, about coming from a spot where I was a top rep is sometimes people think when I start working with them, coaching, I'm going to talk about, hey, look how great I was. Mm-hmm. I love saying I did all these things, but who cares? Who cares? I left on great terms with this company because they're called K-Force, left on great terms. Their stock's up like 70% since I left. Maybe I was the problem. I keep in touch with some people, a lot of people who I thought would keep in touch. They haven't called me. Life moves on. We're all replaceable. So I always say, you might as well start with humility. Life's going to humble you anyway, right? You're going to have ups and downs of business, but if we can stay neutral in our thinking, not get too high, not get too low. And what you just talked about is so powerful because that gentleman who was as successful as he was, he showed you that, hey, we can get better each day. Someone can. We all have the same amount of time in a day, 1,440 minutes. You don't get more, I don't get more. We get the same amount. So it's up to us. Are we going to stay the same? Or are we going to challenge ourselves to get a little bit better each day? No one stays, right? You're either getting better or getting worse. No one stays the same.
Right.
So
yeah, that's a really good thought, Casey. And which brings me to the fourth of your key points here, vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. And, that's another word that you don't normally think associated with sales, right? So, wow, you really got to, you got me thinking about like, what are these long held kind of beliefs about what sales is? And here you come along, you say it's curiosity. Okay, that kind of makes sense. Messaging, got it. Humility, wow. And then vulnerability. So I'd like to hear your take on that, because that's an area that I could definitely see salespeople, especially veterans, very hard to admit when they have a problem or they have a challenge. And sometimes because they've been beat down in other organizations whenever they try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of two examples. I think of one, I think of pipeline health. And so when I do pipeline reviews with my clients, or even back when I was at this company, too often sellers don't want to talk about why their pipeline sucks or what they don't know. Or they'll say, hey, this deal, they're going to probably close in 2 or 3 weeks. And the leader then should say, great, tell me why. Mm-hmm. And does the rep have the confidence to say, I don't know, shoot, I was just saying it because I was hoping you wouldn't keep grilling me on it. But the power is, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Boss, my pipeline sucks. I need help. And I'm not my best version of myself. I'm not sure why, but I love this company. I love working here. I'd love some help. Most leaders aren't going to get mad and say, you're out of here. Let's put you on a sales performance plan. They might be a little concerned, but I think when we can be vulnerable enough to ask for help, and then I think about externally, when a client says something to you, or they're talking about something in their business, or maybe a word you don't quite understand, you can either shake your head. Yep. Okay. I totally understand what you're talking about. Or you can say, hey, great. Tell me more about that word. I'm not sure about that, which takes vulnerability to ask, because we don't want to get judged that make the client think we don't know what the hell we're talking about. I'd rather ask the question, because usually when you ask a question and being vulnerable enough to ask a question about something that someone else is really good at or passionate about, they're most likely going to talk about themselves, I found. And if the one out of 20 people want to, make that the reason they're not going to do business with me, that's fine. That's probably not a client I want in the first place. I want to work with clients who are genuine, real, authentic, understand that we're all in this journey of life together. No one has it all figured out. Right. We never will have it all figured out. We're not perfect. And I think we can create those relationships, those vulnerable relationships of like, we're all real people. Then I think it makes for a better foundation to build a stronger relationship that will help you kind of battle through the ups and downs of any sort of business climate or cycle.
Wow. Well, so this kind of connects to something that is now becoming like receive wisdom. It makes sense. Anybody who's selling now in the last like 5 to 10 years recognizes, I think it was Corporate Executive Board, I think, that did the big report, and then Gartner followed up, that says basically buyers are about 2/3 down the funnel, so to speak, before they engage with a salesperson now. Mm-hmm. Because we used to, as sales professionals, we had something the buyer did not have, which is information, product information, and so on. That isn't true anymore. Now the buyer can get access to just about all product information that they might want on my website. So, so you're jumping in on the short list, but a much more kind of intense period of time. How has selling changed in terms of the approach to selling? And how much of what your philosophy is related to what's happening right now? Or is these are just principles that would have been true when Ogg sold the first wheel?
I think, I tell you what's changed that I am jealous of sellers today that I don't think they realize. So like when we were back, I'll pose that, put you and I in the same bucket. When we were cold calling, it was like, here's a phone book, go get them. Mm-hmm. Right. And you had to like massive phone calls. That's not, maybe we're texting now, we're doing social selling. It's different right now. Or you still might go to networking events. But what I love about the selling you can do now is like, I don't have to get your permission to tag you on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I don't have to get your permission if I think you should meet someone else and connect people. Right. Nothing fills my tank more as a coach now, as I'm still selling my own business, is connecting other people and being a boomerang of service without keeping score. If I can bring commonality through people that I know at my level, my career, obviously maybe a little easier than a 22-year-old seller, mm-hmm. but finding ways to connect that it's maybe a little bit uncommon. I think LinkedIn gives you that ability to do so. I am convinced that, there's technology, there's bots, there's all these things to automate the sales process. It'll never, ever, ever replace the way you can make someone feel through listening, through the way we set expectations, the way we show up with positivity, the way I document in the CRM and follow up, the way I check my ego and I'm authentically trying to learn and be my best, and the way I have to be persistent yet patient to let a relationship grow at the right authentic pace. I think about Voltaire back in the 1700s. He was a little, he might've been a sexist, so I'll help him out. He said, a man or woman is not judged by his or her answers, but by his or her questions. We were talking about curiosity back in the 1700s.
Right.
1800s, a guy named Orson Swett Marden, who I wrote about in my book. He talked about adversity, talked about the power of the golden rule. In the 1800s was his number one reason why he was so successful. He had 500,000 subscribers to a magazine. Think about that. 500,000 subscribers to a magazine called Success Magazine, 1897. Yet he generated that interest by just being nice to people. Right. So I'm like, you know what? Hey, that worked for me in the late 90s to 2000s. Being curious was still working in 1700. It still worked for me in 2022. Treating people with respect, being nice, showing up on time. That stuff's not going to go out of style, I'm convinced. So we can look for the best technology if you're a sales team out there. But in the end, get back to stuff that's always worked and will always work. And I'm sure there's people that would disagree with me, but I'd rather hook horns and hook arms with people that believe in the foundational elements of building relationships that are that will withstand anything if it's done the right way. So I would say that's the biggest thing is, yeah, there's things that have changed, but there's things that I don't believe will ever change if you really focus on them.
Yeah, and I think, Casey, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the reality is until, and maybe it'll happen, maybe not in my lifetime, but, you know, we're all purchasing is done strictly AI to AI, and there are no people involved. And, you know, there's some companies that are waiting for that day so they don't have to have salespeople. but that day isn't here yet. And mm-hmm. So you're running and you're jumping in deeper into the funnel. Yes. But then all those things you talked about, how you show up, how you interact, how you're sincerely curious, all those things, I think are even more valuable under a more compressed time frame for a buyer, where a buyer mm-hmm. now is like, they got to tell their boss that they're ready to make a decision in 90 days. Mm-hmm. They really need to work with somebody they can feel some level of trust. And I think a lot of the things you talked about here really are about building that kind of bridge to, I can believe you're here to help me if you're selling to me. I understand you have to sell to make mm-hmm. a living, and I respect that. Most people are mature enough to understand that. But as long as you're not going to sell me something that's bad for me and you're looking to create value for me, I can feel good about that relationship. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Someone taught me, so the same gentleman taught me what's about called the art of persuasion. Art of persuasion, as one definition says, the moment I try to convince you to do something, you will resist me. However, if I ask great questions of value to make you realize how great my idea is, that it will benefit you, that's called value-based selling. Now, when I first heard that, I challenged the person. I said, that kind of sounds manipulating. I don't want to manipulate someone into buying. He looked at me, says, do you believe what you do matters? I said, 100%, which is why I have the sign above me. He goes, would you ever try to convince someone to do something or buy something where only you win? I said, no, why would I? Of course I wouldn't do that. He goes, of course you wouldn't, Casey. That's called value-based selling. The power in selling, though, is how often are we going to say no to a client? Right? So how people, if they're sales or business leaders listening right now, think about the last time you said, we're not the right fit for you and walk away and watch the look on their face. I wrote about a story in my book where there was a client where I could not wait to work with. And he finally gave me this opportunity, but it was like 6 week time frame to get a bunch of consultants in this project to get staff before this big convention in Las Vegas. And I was like putting the math together. I was like, there's no way we're going to be able to do this. It's just, and I was like trying to convince myself. And I remember told the guy, I said, Dan, as much as I want to do this, and I want to do it so bad, there's too much risk. I know that you might not like my answer, but I've worked so hard to get this opportunity with you. It's not worth it. And so I don't think we're the best fit for you. He's like, what do you mean you're the best fit? I said, because when you're in Vegas, either in the bathroom or at the bar or your buddy's hotel room, you're like, and somehow our company gets brought up and they're like, Jay Cox, oh yeah, that's that guy that sold us that project and then took us down the website and made us look like idiots here in this conference. Yeah, great guy. Give him a call. Like, of course you're not going to say it. You're going to be like, you're going to torch me. And right. To me, it's not worth it. And I found that to me, that was an uncommon thing I was doing at the time, unconsciously, but to me, I was just going back to doing the right thing, you know? And, I found that when you did those things, you gained more trust and more actually opened the door to more opportunities because it was refreshing. People aren't used to hearing that. People are used to hearing, yep, we can solve all the world's problems and open up my trench coat and give you toothbrushes and floss and
what else?
Ketchup and mustard over here. What else can we get you?
Wow. Yeah, that's right. Well, doing the right thing. So speaking of which, you mentioned your book. So just tell us about your book.
Yeah. So I've had this idea for 10 plus years. And I didn't want to write it when I was still in the corporate world because I didn't want it to be a distraction. And it came out in 2020 and it's getting some more legs right now. And the book's called Win the Relationship, Not the Deal. And it really is, you know, six core common principles that I focused on when I was selling at an elite level. And I wasn't always good at these six things, but sometimes when I would get off track or try to figure out, God, what's not working? It was like, you know, these simple reminders that we all need as sellers, whether it's because chapter one's about the power of bringing positivity to your huddle, your team, your office, your meeting, whatever you got going on in life, don't bring baggage. It's not fair to your team. Chapter two is about expectation management. Simple things that clients don't think of, sellers don't think about. If I'm going to be late, let someone know. I don't care if it's 1 minute, 3 minute. Anything that you can set expectations on messaging or delivering communication, get ahead of it. Your clients are already thinking about it. Chapter three is about the difference between hearing and listening. hearing is when I'm talking to you, but I'm looking at my phone, I'm checking my phone, my watch, I'm looking at the planes, I'm just totally distracted. Listening is conscious, hearing is subconscious. Chapter 4 is about documentation. Most sellers, when I say CRM or documentation, they're like, oh God, my boss wants me to document. They want to be in my business and micromanage me. Wrong answer, guys and girls. A CRM made me look way smarter than I am because it reminded me when to call, when to document, what the client's birthday was, where their kid go to school, all these things that allowed me to know about them. Chapter 5 is about authenticity, letting your authentic self shine, letting your ego go. Art of practice. Sales teams don't like to practice. They like to practice on their clients.
That's right.
And chapter 6 is about patience and being able to persevere through ups and downs. And it takes time.
Wow.
And it's been super rewarding. It's a short read.
I love it. So Casey, first of all, just really thank you for taking the time to be with us today. I think we shared some really great things. So the name of the book again is?
Win the Relationship, Not the Deal.
Win the Relationship, Not the Deal. And if somebody listening wanted to know more about you, maybe to contact you, where should they go?
Best way is just to connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm there, or just visit my website, which is caseyjacox.com. So caseyjacox.com. I'm on Twitter as well, but the best way to social connect with me is through LinkedIn.
Fantastic. Well, Casey Jacox, you have added value today to our listening audience. Really appreciate it and appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
I'm honored to join, and we should tease your audience to let them know that you will be joining me, Jose, on a future episode of the Quarterback Dadcast. We will learn about how you are going to share your dad wisdom to help us become better fathers. So I can't wait to return the favor for you.
I really appreciate the opportunity. I look forward to it.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose. If you like the show, hit subscribe and leave us a review to help other people find the podcast. And if you're ready to take the next step in driving intentional growth for your business, come check out what we're doing at valueprop.com. We've developed industry-leading programs and systems to help B2B owners take control of their growth. Until then, thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose.